Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
We will take our leap forward for Kansas City. Your chance, though, to win a pair of tickets to the International Champions Cup. FC Bayern against AC Milan at Children's Mercy Park. You can get your tickets now at Ticketmaster.com, or you can win a pair just for listening, and Ryan makes it very easy.
I always like to keep it very simple on you. I know it's the morning time. I know you may not have had your cup of Joe or whatever it is you call coffee. Do people still call it Joe?
I think Java is the new word they're using.
Interesting. I didn't know that. All you have to do is listen and then dial. Be listening for this.
You're on the radio right now, live.
Next time you hear that, be caller number
three.
Caller number three to... I just forgot the phone number for a second. 913-576-7610. I will hook you up with a pair of tickets to the International Champions
Cup. I know I've almost given out my own phone number on the air many a time.
Yeah, definitely gotten through the first three of my digits.
Do you even know your phone number anymore?
Absolutely. Yes. I give it away all the time.
Yeah. How many 555?
How many phone numbers, though, outside of the station number do you know?
I know my wife's phone number. I know my parents' home phone number. I don't know their cell phone numbers.
I, too, have your wife's phone number memorized.
I know my sister's cell phone number.
That's a longer list than mine.
I know my friend Viking Jim's cell phone number because I refuse to put him in my phone, so I just have his number come up. Like, the two of us are idiots. We refuse to put each other in the phone with our names. So
seems like a weird hill to die on.
It really is, but he does it and I do it, so I know his phone number.
That's a lot. I think it's a lot. I think it's a high number.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Do you remember your phone number from, like, childhood?
361-3767.
Yeah, 588-2845.
Do you?
2520315.
Yeah, everybody remembers their first phone number. You always remember your first.
That's right. Oh. Remember it fondly,
and we say it really fast, like, hopefully, like, oh, nobody still has that number.
Should we call our old phone numbers and see who has them?
Yeah, might as well.
I used to have this number. Like, you know, you show up to people's homes and be like, I used to live here. Can I see my old room?
Great.
Have you ever done that?
No.
Have you?
No.
No.
In our old house when I was a kid, we buried like a
treasure,
like a metal box that had all of our treasures in it. And then we moved and nobody ever dug it up. I bet there's like 1450 in there and, you know, a bunch of G.I. Joes or something.
That'd be cool. It'd be cool to find that time capsule.
Love to get that 1450.
Kind of what
back.
Bob's going to find tomorrow, they were saying?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
During the
14 bucks at a G.I. Joe.
What are they going to find in my colon tomorrow?
69306. What will we find in Bob's butt?
I'm very nervous.
Other than his head, what will
be
in his ass?
Very nervous.
Very nervous. You guys are all, everybody's making fun of me. Oh, it's not a big deal.
It's not a big deal. People have colonoscopies every day.
Yeah, they have like 10 a day.
It's like a car wash.
I've never seen
an obit where it was like, well, she had a colonoscopy and never woke up.
Right, but it's not you. It's still, I'm not used to this. I'm not used to going to the doctor.
You're
going to
be asleep. You're not even going to know the intrusion.
I'm not used to being put out either.
You're not used to having things inserted in your anal cavity.
No. Have you ever got it? They're putting fiber optics up
my
butt.
No, I've never had a camera or anything else in my anus.
Yeah. That you know of.
Oh, college was a weird time.
It really was.
69306. This following up on our last segment. My husband lost both teeth in the net dunking. Got caught in the net. Ooh. Able to save one, but he has a retainer tooth. He was 5'10".
Fat Mahomes said.
I think
said
she's probably saying, don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't try to dunk.
Fat Mahomes says he got in shape when he was 30 to dunk and was able to do it. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean,
can he still do it?
No. Have you seen him? He goes by Fat Mahomes.
Yeah. Working on that vertical. Speaking of one giant leap. All week long.
Cajun butter from Smokehouse.
That sounds good.
That's probably true. We're discussing the moon landing, the anniversary, 50th anniversary of the moon landing, right?
Yeah.
What?
So today.
Is this in the news?
One giant leap. What will be the next leap forward for Kansas City.
Brian, why don't you get us started off here?
Well, I think mine is a little bit of a two-parter, but I will. I think that the NFL draft in Kansas City coming, what, 2024? I keep forgetting when the right year is. 2024 sounds right. I get it mixed up with the World Cup. That's 26.
World Cup 26.
2026 is the World Cup.
Yeah, so 2024, the NFL draft, I feel like that will be the next giant leap forward for Kansas City. And I think a lot of it's going to have to do with some of the things that we
2023 for the draft.
That we do in preparation for the NFL draft. And I think that the number one thing, at least in my opinion, as we move forward and start having to look towards that, is going to be expanding the streetcar. Being able to get you from point A to point B and not have a huge congestion of parking and all sorts of other things. I know that's our big complaint here in Kansas City. Where are we going to park?
Yeah.
Well, I think that helps answer a lot when you have these satellite parking lots and you can take some light rail or a streetcar to get to your destination. So I think that will be our next big leap forward as a city, because I just think it gives you so many other opportunities outside of just the NFL draft. I mean, I think that you start to really be able to have people from the burbs go, hey, you want to know what? Let's go to downtown, because I don't have to worry about the one-way streets and where am I going to park and all of those things.
Well, the expansion is coming, and I don't know what year it's supposed to be finished, but where they're putting it all the way out to UMKC, but I think the key to the streetcar expansion is also east-west in the city. And you mentioned those satellite parking lots, Ryan. The latest KC Bobcast with David Ficklin, who is in charge of the World Cup bid for Kansas City, used the hashtag KC2026. You can listen to the podcast, but they've already got it all planned out for how they're going to move people around, because transportation was the biggest issue that the World Cup and FIFA have with Kansas City. How are you moving people around? How are you getting people from point A to the stadium and point B to the stadium and point C to the stadium? And what they're going to do, and I don't want to give away the whole podcast, but they're going to have like 200 buses brought into town for the World Cup. And they're going to have satellite parking lots all over the metro area, whether you're in Lee Summit or Johnson County or Wyandotte County or downtown or places in between. They're going to have hubs where you can go drop your car off and then be bussed out to Arrowhead
for all of these games.
And I said to David, I go, wait a second, we've got 22,000 parking spots out at Arrowhead. Why can't people just drive? Do you realize for the World Cup, half the parking spaces at Arrowhead and Kauffman Stadium will be commandeered by FIFA?
I imagine, yeah.
And
the space
and will be
that it takes to do for whatever.
Television, yeah. And oof. Back of the house things and parties and receptions and all of that kind of stuff. So half the parking spots out there will be eliminated. So that's why they're going to have 200 buses driving people in to Arrowhead Stadium from all over the metro area. So I like your idea of expanding the streetcar ride. I'm a huge mass transit guy. I wish we had legit light rail in this town where it wasn't an issue, where we could take it from the airport to downtown, then get on the streetcar and use the streetcar around town, and then get on a line that would take you out to Overland Park or further out south to Waldo or South Kansas City and out into Lee's Summit and places in between. That helps so much with a city grow when you can have that mass transit and people don't have to worry about where you're going to park. Because I don't know about you guys, there is some anxiety of where am I going to park? Where am I going to leave my car? How much earlier do I have to leave to make sure that I find a parking spot? And if you just have the streetcar or the mass transit better in this town, people don't have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Or just as Ryan mentioned, just getting from Joco down to the crossroads.
Right. Yeah, 913 saying, I thought Uber made it so people from the burbs didn't have to worry about where they're going
to
park.
Yeah, I mean, that's helped for sure.
Sure, it's helped a little. I think that when you're talking about families, though, like there's not a whole family of people that want to take an Uber down to Sprint
Center. My kids think it's cool to ride in an Uber. Like if we're on vacation or something somewhere, get an Uber.
It's like a limo.
Oh, they think it's great.
It's like a limo.
Let's just get an Uber. Do you have the money for that?
Got Bob, Uber money.
Bob, what's your next leap forward?
The downtown stadium, and it's coming faster than people want to know and people want to admit to, but that's the next leap forward for Kansas City. That's the final piece of the puzzle for downtown. It's the final ornament on the tree, if you will. And for me, that big leap forward will be the downtown baseball stadium before people freak out, where are we going to tailgate for football? We're not talking football. We're talking baseball.
Also, you know what would help with that?
What's that?
Better public transit.
Yeah, right.
And better access to those big parking lots. All that kind of ties in. Mine, I think, follows yours. So it wouldn't be the next leap, but I think it would be the leap after that, which is roof for Arrowhead.
Right.
A top on Arrowhead. And I don't know why, but I feel like, Bob, that we're at the point where the only time there will be a cover on Arrowhead is when there's not a baseball stadium there, too.
Sure.
Like, that would be, like, the next project after it.
Right.
That we finally realize the ability to host other big-time events that require a roof. But I think eventually they get a roof. Whether it's a new stadium with a roof or a roof on the existing stadium, I think the roof for Arrowhead. But I think the timing-wise,
yeah.
To me, I just, for some reason, feel like it would follow a downtown stadium. Does that make sense?
I think like that's the, I don't want to say the consolation prize for the Chiefs, but that, I think ultimately that could be something to keep the Chiefs in Missouri, you know, and not have them go over to like Edwardsville or someplace like that, where we've talked about on the other side of 435 and I-70 on the Kansas side of things. I think ultimately, big picture, I want the Chiefs to stay where they are, get that parking lot, put Kauffman Stadium downtown, and then, you know, put a retractable type roof over Arrowhead. I don't want Arrowhead closed up for Chiefs games at all. I don't care what the weather is outside. Even those brutal cold postseason games, I still want it open. But I want the ability to have the roof to get events to Kansas City that we don't have right now.
I want a Final Four.
Right.
I want a Final Four being back in Kansas City.
Right.
And the only way that's going to happen is something like that. So,
correct.
And in addition to opening the door to do a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, they're already doing more programming than they probably ever have, right, at Arrowhead for other events and what have you. But imagine the number of events that could come because you have a venue of that sort. And then, for the most part, I think you want to keep it open during football games as much as possible. But it would give you the opportunity that if it got really bad to not do that as well. And I just feel like the timing of that one to me is a little bit different because I don't think it happens when there's a baseball stadium there, too. I think it's, as you mentioned, a secondary piece of the, oh, by the way, the other stadium has moved. Mm-hmm. This opens the door to do more things here at Arrowhead.
Yeah, it's from the text line, 816, kill two birds, get the downtown stadium built before 2026, and you have all the extra parking. And in a perfect world, that would be awesome, but the leases don't expire for another 10 or 11 years. So there's
a little while out.
Yeah.
Cheyenne KCK, your winner. Latest winner of a pair of tickets to the International Champions Cup. That was our 8 o'clock hour prize just for listening. Give stuff away at 7, 8, and 9 o'clock just for hanging out with us. Ned has another lesson we must all learn together. Next.
Fesco in the morning.
Royals have a day game today.
After a night game. Logistical nightmare for a baseball player.
They go for the sweep of a four-gamer with the White Sox.
I like it, baby. I like it. Brad, 5-1 since the break.
Brad Keller on the mound today.
Why do you guys hate my idea of dividing the season in halves?
It devalues two halves of a season.
Doesn't matter. The Royals would be right in this thing right now. Like
so as long as it just benefits you, you're fine.
No, not at all. I think if it benefits baseball, it benefits the game, it benefits everybody to have two halves to the season. I love it.
I don't think it does.
It clearly does. It gives everybody another opportunity. It benefits baseball. More people go to the games. It means more money for baseball. Grow the game.
I think you're basically building in more lulls into the season.
I don't necessarily see
if
that.
If I've got a 10-game lead.
Yeah.
And I'm...
Well, you're talking about the Twins, you know, peeing their lead away right now?
What I'm saying is, like, if I've got a lead and I know that I'm going to mathematically win my division in the first half, why would I put my best players out there?
Because it's shown over the years in all sports that when you start resting players, it's not a good thing.
I mean, they get a week off anyway, Bob.
For what?
The All-Star game?
Not if you're good.
There's no week off. You get three games off. You get 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know, the Astros and Rangers played Thursday last week, so not everybody had the four-day week.
Nobody knew about that.
I did.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. I watched that game.
11 o'clock for Cody's On Deck show today, and I'm guessing we might get another installment of Ned on the Moon. I think this has got to be the entire week, right?
I would imagine.
About right.
Because Ned was at it again yesterday. Teaching us all something.
Okay, P63, Cody, this is your moon lesson for today. And it's with all of them.
Okay.
But we'll go with Apollo 11. P63 is the program 63, which is the PDI, Power Descent Initiation.
That's the one with the abs.
So when they get to a P63. Point where they're going to go PDI, right, that's where program 63 starts. and they hit their engines and they burn and they slow down and they drop in orbit, all right? Until it's usually a 9-minute burn until they get within 2,500 feet of the ground.
When I did it was like 25-minute burn, Bob. It was a killer.
They're flying
the
like
P-63.
Window down. P-64 kicks in and they go upright, all right? And then they land, they get to P-66,
PFAT?
Which is when they land, right?
Now, PFAT, the they're on top of that.
When they pitched over P-64, Neil Armstrong saw that they were going to land in a football stadium crater full of boulders.
Was Ned on this rocket ship?
Yes.
Okay, like Ned was there, right? Like I feel like he was either on the spaceship or he was in the command center down in Austin or wherever it took place. Continue on.
So he knew at that point that he had four options, right? Couldn't land in the crater. So he had to either peel right, peel left, way back and land short, or hit the gas and land long. The easiest thing for him to do was hit the gas and land long, right? So when he hit the gas, it burned up valuable fuel. They have a thing called a quantity light. When the quantity light comes on, that's 60 seconds of fuel left, mandatory abort at the end of 60 seconds, right? It'll shoot you off. When Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin hit the ground, they had 23 seconds of fuel left and never panicked.
That is today's Moon Lessons with Ned.
When I heard him say that, I immediately went to game four against the Astros.
Okay.
And immediately thought, as the Royals are down in game four against the Houston Astros, and Ryan Lefevre opens that broadcast, boy, if you want to dream a little bit, like our old buddy Fred White used to say.
About a 9-minute burn.
Right? It really was a 9-minute burn.
A 9-minute burn in high school.
That was a good burn, baby. That's a good burn if you can get 9 minutes, right? So I immediately thought back to that eighth inning in Houston. I'm like, okay, this is exactly why Ned is calm. Because Ned is such a student of the moon and the moon landing and everything that went into it. At least he's convicted in what he's talking about. Whether or not he's telling the truth, I don't know. Or
it's a beautiful planet. Well, it's a moon.
I mean, whether he's convicted in it or not, he knows and makes you feel like he has an idea of what he's talking about. And so if Ned really is a student of the moon and has been researching this and watching this stuff for all these years, right, he's known for years that Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong were 23 seconds away from running out of fuel before they landed that sucker over that crater full of boulders.
We landed on the moon!
And they were able to remain calm, cool, and collected that entire time. You see that clock ticking down, and there's 60 seconds of fuel left, and you know that you've got a minute to either land this thing or you've got to get – it's going to abort you, and you're going to get thrown out of that thing mandatorily, as Ned put it. And I think Ned, maybe in his subconscious – and he would disagree with me on this just because that's the way he is, right?
Yeah.
But he would disagree with me
No. Yeah.
Right, yeah. He would disagree with me on the surface and then come back around and go, yeah, you're probably right about that. He would disagree with me on the surface with this, but I think subconsciously when the Royals entered that eighth inning and they had six outs to go and their season was going to be over in a year that they were supposed to win the world championship, Ned remained calm. And the reason that Ned remained calm is because he had a thought back to Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong and went, they had 23 seconds left of fuel. They remained calm, and they were able to land this thing on the moon. What we need to do here is remain calm, and we're going to go out there, and we're going to find a way, and we're going to win this baseball game. And that has been one of Ned's greatest attributes as manager of the Royals, in both of our opinions. We've stated this numerous times. He's got the uncanny ability of remaining calm. He never gets too high. He never gets too low. It's the perfect characteristic to have as a manager. How did he develop that characteristic? Probably by studying Neil Armstrong and Lance Armstrong and all the other Armstrongs that landed on the moon with Buzz Aldrin.
Stretch
Armstrong. Who's your favorite Armstrong?
Louis.
Louis Armstrong?
Yep.
He was a good one, too.
Louis.
Really funny comedian. So I think subconsciously, Ned, in the back of his mind, when the going got tough, and then again with Wade Davis and remaining calm during that Wade Davis situation where he sat out for 60 minutes, remaining calm in those tight situations kept everybody else calm in that dugout. If Ned was freaking out and Ned was going nuts, the players would have freaked out. They would have gone nuts. They wouldn't have won that game. We wouldn't have had that world championship in 2015. The moon landing 50 years ago is the reason why the Royals were able to win the World Series in 2015.
Like how you tied that all together.
Prove me wrong. Is Ned calling?
That's Ned's moon lesson for the day.
So, Ned, here's how the question would go. Ned, did that story of the moon landing where they had 23 seconds left to fuel have any effect on the way you manage game four? No.
No. But I'll tell you what it had an effect on.
Remaining calm.
Game four.
Yeah, right.
No, no, not at all.
No, no, come on.
Not at all.
Not at all, but I'll tell you what.
But tell you what, in game four, I was so relaxed. Right. Why?
Because I remember Buzz Aldrin had 23 seconds left to fuel. And if he could remain calm in that situation, I could remain calm in this situation. And I really believe that Ned's demeanor was a big reason and a big part of why that club was able to accomplish what they were able to accomplish.
One more game of the series today. One more game of this homestand. I got to think we're going to get another installment of Ned on the moon today. At least we can
hope so.
Text line asking us to stop you in your tracks right now. I was just going to let him cook. I thought he was going somewhere with that.
If anybody would have stopped them in their tracks, they would have never made it to the moon.
Never would have made it to the moon.
You think that's how Ned made it through falling out of that tree stand?
Absolutely.
He was laying there on the ground.
Remain calm.
Used his Verizon phone to call his wife and then sat there and thought about the 23 seconds left of fuel.
No question. Remain calm.
Remain calm.
I mean, if you're so obsessed with something, like Ned is obviously with the moon landing, right?
Seems to be, right? Yes.
And you, like, years ago, Ned had a bunch of books on his desk from world leaders and great leaders and, you know, learning how to be a leader. And if you're so obsessed with something like he is with the moon landing, then you probably have had always in the back of your mind, when you get into a tough situation, you don't freak out. You don't panic. You don't overreact. You remain calm. And there have been obviously instances with the tree, with the game four, eighth inning, where things weren't going your way, and it would have been easy to panic. I know I was panicking. I heard about Ned. I'm like, oh, my God! And then game four, we were all panicking in game four. We assumed it was over. The guy never wavered. And so whether he wants to admit it or subconsciously accept it, the moon landing had an effect on the way Ned's lived his life. That story has a bigger effect on his life than anybody wants to give a credit for, except me.
All the credit to P63. Big story coming up. Our QB compared to Hall of Famer you might not like. And another QB getting out over his skis. We'll discuss next.
Fesco in the morning.
Lots to get to between now and 9 o'clock. Brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967. We'll play a little U.S. Open golfer or contemporary philosopher.
Gonna school y'all today.
Coming up in just a few minutes.
Well, you go learn.
Throwing darts at the schedule. And we'll let Bob play an edition of why they'll be 6-10. That all coming up. Time now for the big story.
The Browns are a lock.
But the big moment has finally come.
It's the big story.
This may be the biggest thing that's ever happened.
If it's what you're talking about, it's what we're talking about.
My God, are you still talking?
Brought to you by Spring Venture Group on Fesco in the Morning.
We love it when others love our quarterback these days.
Boy, don't we.
Anybody talking greatness about Patrick Mahomes, we're all ears.
We are listening, baby.
Even if it's a former Bronco.
That's all right. This is a good comparison, and I think it's a fair comparison, but there's one thing that I would change.
A former Bronco comparing Patrick Mahomes to another former Bronco?
You don't want to compare him to Bubby Brister.
Yeah, Brian Greasy or
Tim Tebow.
Even Jake Plummer. But on the Peter King podcast, Peyton Manning admits he's even a big fan of Patrick Mahomes.
I think everybody is, and I'm no different. I mean, some of the throws that he's making – yeah, I don't think anybody's seen before, whether it's, you know, the kind of the no-look throws. I mean, I think some of the sort of the ability to sprint left, throw back right. You know, he got a little Elway in him. Elway was kind of famous for that. I mean, the Broncos actually started designing plays to sprint left and throw back right. Mahomes is still improvising. But what I like about him is that he's taking coaching. Andy Reid is going to coach the stew out of him. I like that for him and his future. I like head coaches calling the offensive plays because you know they're going to be there. They're not going to have
right.
a coordinator leave the next year, and you got to learn this new system. And it's kind of what Matt, you know, Ryan has had to deal with a little bit once Kyle Shanahan left, and that's hard learning the new system. So
it was so interesting when you got to Denver. You asked Jack Del Rio, right? And I think wasn't it Jack Del Rio and Adam Gase? No, you guys aren't going to leave, are you?
Exactly.
No, yeah.
That was it because you're looking for some continuity. I mean, I think Alex Smith told me he had five different coordinators his first 5 years.
And yeah.
It's tough. And so I like the fact that Mahomes is going to be coached, that he takes coaching, and that he plays in a disciplined system. At the same time, he can make a lot of plays on his own, and he's just fun and entertaining to watch. I like his kind of spirit and love and passion for the game that shows up when you watch him play as well.
There's Peyton Manning talking with Peter King about Patrick Mahomes, compares him to Elway. And I know before you go, man, I was jealous of Elway. I hated Elway because I was jealous of Elway. The guy was a really good quarterback.
Well, that's where jealousy comes from, you know.
That was the entire crux of the hatred of it was because he was good.
Yep.
And we were always looking for a quarterback, and there was Elway. So Mahomes being Elway, in this instance, I don't mind it at all. Also, I thought, Bob, very interesting. We often hear the detriment that is a head coach calling plays.
Right.
Right?
Right.
We've gone over that a few times here in Kansas City, right? Turn over the plays. Let somebody else call the plays. That's the first actual defense of that makes sense.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning saying, you know what? I love the head coach calling plays. Why he's not going anywhere? Head coach ain't leaving.
Right.
Coordinators may come and go. But the lead voice isn't going anywhere. And how huge is that for a quarterback? We see many a quarterback wrecked by going through multiple offensive coordinators early in their career. Pat's going to have Andy.
Well, and I think also, you know, we saw it firsthand with Alex Smith. I think he was wrecked by coordinators. I think Matt Cassel, to an extent, was wrecked here by having offensive coordinators kind of change their
different
way
voices
out.
In
different
his
voices
ear. Yeah.
From Charlie Weiss to Todd Haley
yeah,
to
that's
Brian,
what wrecked him.
Brian DeBall and, you know, whoever else was an offensive coordinator here in Kansas City. When you don't have the same coordinator, you're not giving your quarterback an opportunity. And that's why when you look at teams that are successful, they're successful because they're stable. And I've told this story 1,000 times, and I'll continue to say it, meeting with Al Saunders when we were both in St. Louis and sitting there and having him tell me, every time you switch coordinators, you're learning a new language. It's being like placed in France and only being able to speak English and being asked to find your way. And then the next year you're being placed in Luxembourg and you don't speak Luxembourgian, you only speak English, and you have to try to find your way out. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. And by the time you adjust and then the coordinator gets fired and you bring a new coordinator and you're starting back from square one, you're never moving forward in the offense. And that's why the Chiefs and the success that they've had is because of Andy Reid and the stability.
The only hole I have in that is I'm American, so any of these places I'm going, don't you speak English?
Right, and they don't. If you went to Luxembourg...
Don't you speak English?
If you went to Luxembourg, do you think the Luxembourgians would speak English to you? No. You'd have to figure out their language. And that's what it's like getting a new coordinator, a new head coach every year, a new language, a new system.
I've seen enough of the Amazing Race. They're not helping you out.
They're not. It's very difficult to do. And so it's not an excuse. It's reality. Sometimes reality does sound like excuse. Just get out there and play football. It's not that easy. It's not that easy to go out there and do things if you don't really know what you're supposed to be doing.
Wow, Luxembourgish is actually a language.
I told you it was.
No, you didn't. You're just guessing.
Our friend from finance is going to Luxembourg.
And she learned Luxembourgish?
She knows Luxembourgish.
French, the most common language spoken in Luxembourg.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was like half French, half German, something like that.
That is true.
Yeah,
German, like French, and Luxembourgish.
Luxembourgish so is kind of like a brackish. Where
they just made up.
I thought it was like goulash, to be honest with you.
Well, they could have that too.
Made up their own language?
Yeah.
It's just, again, the perfect combination. Coach, quarterback, all those things that have come to fruition. And I believe that there's been plenty of quarterbacks. Maybe not. Maybe I wouldn't include, like you've included, Matt Cassel in that camp.
Well,
but
I'm just giving examples of quarterbacks.
I think there have been plenty of quarterbacks ruined by that aren't elite level. Like, there's some you could probably drop in wherever. And Pat may be one of those guys.
Maybe.
I don't know. But I'm glad we don't have to find out. But I firmly believe if he was in another location, he wouldn't have been what he was last year, okay?
I mean, look at the success that Brady has had with, you know, the same offensive coordinator. You look at the success that Roethlisberger had all those years with Bruce Arians.
Early in the careers, you can just go and look and like, well, he had four offensive coordinators in five seasons.
Right.
And those guys typically aren't, like, any good.
I mean, Manning had the same guy for a long time, too.
Those are the ones that struggle.
Right.
Because they're hearing too many voices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think your assessment, though, of Castle is we don't know what his ability was,
right.
But I know he had way too many voices going on in his ears,
mm-hmm.
and pulled different directions, and it was used as a pawn between a lot of people.
Right.
So that wrecked him.
Yep.
Certainly did, or at least did not allow him to have a chance to evolve.
Right.
And I think a lot of quarterbacks go through that, and Pat won't have to.
No, and that's a great thing to have. You don't have to worry about it. Every year, you know you can build on what you did last year. You don't have to worry about learning the basics of the language all over again. You've got the basics in, and now you're adding to it, and you're expanding. And by the time you take Spanish 4 or Andy Reid 4, you're pretty confident in what's going on, and you have an idea of what, you know, the game plan is.
Is that a foreign language that they offer in school?
Andy Reid? Andy Reid 1, 2, 3, and 4. You take Andy Reid 1 as a freshman.
You have to have 4 semesters of Andy Reid?
4 years.
Oof.
4 years of
That's
Andy
rough.
Reid.
I only took 3 semesters of Spanish. Well, I don't speak any of it.
No, you don't. Don't tell anybody. Mrs. Smalley, Senorita Smalley used to tell me, don't tell anybody you took 4 years of Spanish. I said, I actually took 6.
So if you take Andy Reid, you can plan on not finishing college in 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because by year, you have to be a fifth year to actually master Andy Reid.
So I definitely don't want to master Andy Reid.
I'm still amazed why these guys just don't simplify things too, you know? Like all of this talk about how hard it is to learn these offenses, why don't we make things easier?
Speaking of Andy, we heard from Ned, of course, on the moon a little bit earlier.
That's right. Is Andy talking about the moon now?
No, but I will tip my cap to Chiefs beat writer. Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com.
Okay.
Tweeted out last night.
Also
man,
published author.
Matt. Man, I now desperately want to ask Andy Reid about landing on the moon. Quote, yeah.
Andy Reid landed on the moon?
Well, he has roughly the same gravitational pull. Mm.
So his quote from Andy would be, yeah, the moon landing. How great was that? That was a neat deal. Those astronauts, man, those are crazy guys. The thing about them is they did the work, okay? They worked hard. That was what's real.
That's a great quote. That's really good.
I was like, wow. You may have just nailed Andy's answer to that.
Yeah, well, listen, the astronauts, they
and he just trails off.
Just trails off. I'm like, was that football? I didn't know anything about that.
Ted says a couple more guys, and then BJ steps up with a question.
So, Andy, do you like the new hats this year?
You're a good man, BJ.
What do you like about going to training camp away from home?
Andy, are you excited to get the pigskin thrown around?
The Open is underway.
Which one?
The Open.
The Open. The British Open, if you don't want to be a pompous
jerk.
No, it's the
Open. Shane Lowry still is the leader.
Shane Lowry.
Top the leaderboard at 4 under par, 1-stroke lead over the field at the moment.
Good for him.
So it's time to play the Open golfer or contemporary philosopher.
I think you guys are going to learn a lot today from this.
All right. I'm ready.
Where do we start? Bob, you're going to have something inserted in your rectum tomorrow, so we'll start with you.
Okay.
What about Graham Harman? Graham Harman, is he a contemporary philosopher or an open golfer?
Is it G-A-R-E-M-E?
G-A-R-H-A-M, Graham.
Oh, okay, that kind of Graham.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with golfer.
You would be wrong. He is a philosopher. His philosophy has been to reject anthropocentric philosophical views in favor of a metaphysical realist approach.
The real question is,
Ned would disagree with that.
The real question is, we still have philosophers these days?
We do. Like, they're philosophizing.
Like Socrates type people?
Like on Twitter? Or?
Yes, they're wearing togas and they're sitting around philosophizing,
yeah.
I guess.
When was the last time you philosophized?
Senior year of college.
Okay.
Kling, we go over to you. How about Thomas Thurloway? Thomas Thurloway.
Thomas Thurloway. Oh, wow. I think philosopher.
Oh, you would be incorrect. Oh. Thomas Thurloway, an English golfer.
Some guy from Leawood is not happy that we don't know these answers right now.
Probably. I don't. It's astonishing to me. Bob, we'll come back over to you. How about Sam Locke?
Golfer. There's no philosopher named Sam.
That's true. There was a philosopher named John Locke. I'd throw you off with that.
What if he said Samuel?
I would have been stumped probably.
Samuel Locke? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I should have done that.
Yeah, Samuel might have been.
He is Sam Locke from Scotland. Scotland. He's a Scottish
golfer. L-O-C-K-E.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
He's named after the monster over
Ye
there.
Ye old Sam Locke. Kling, we go over to you. How about Jürgen Habermas?
Jürgen Habermas.
Jürgen Habermas.
I once had a Habermas. It was very
medium.
I mean, it was like a medium beer. It wasn't too heavy. It wasn't too light. High in the ABV. I'm going to go philosopher again.
You would be correct. Yes. Jürgen Habermas, known for his theory of communicative action.
Of course he is.
Very well-known philosopher.
From the text line, we totally missed this. We look forward to the challenge of going to the moon.
Well, they've already been there.
That's good. He does look forward to the challenge of going to the moon again. Bob, how about Robert McIntyre? Robert McIntyre, is he an open golfer or a contemporary philosopher?
I'm going to go with open golfer.
You would be correct. Robert McIntyre, another Scottish golfer. You're good. Kling, we come back over to you. How about Matthias Schmid.
Oh, Matthias Schmid. He's a very solid putter, that Matthias Schmid.
You are correct. He is from Germany.
Very good golfer. The long putter is my guess.
Matthias Schmid.
He's got the tall putter.
Oh, of course he does. Yeah.
Bob, the name for you is John McDowell.
Philosopher.
Wow.
Was that a shot in the dark?
Of course.
John McDowell, a Wittgensteinian philosopher.
Oh, yeah, the Wittgensteinian philosophers are some of the best.
I don't disagree with you on that.
No, it's hard to disagree.
Love me some good Wittgenstein. Kling, come back over to you. How about
gravy
David?
Your Wittgenstein?
I don't, actually. I like it dry. David Oderberg.
Oh, David Oderberg. Oh, yeah. Wasn't he in Better Call Saul?
He was. That was Steve Odenkirk.
Oh, yeah, that's right. David Oderberg is a philosopher.
You guys know your philosophers.
Well, we philosophize.
David Oderberg, best known for his 2000 book, Applied Ethics. Maybe you read that in...
That was
before you, not after
sports.
You graduated.
Did not do that.
Kling, here we go.
On the red section of
Wait a minute,
USA
we
today.
Just went with Kling. Bob, back over to you. How about David Chalmers?
That's Mario's father. I'll go golfer.
Oh, I apologize. David Chalmers, the professor of philosophy and director of the Center for Consciousness at the Australian National University. Mm. I thought everyone knew that.
And also invented the triangle in two.
He did. Kling, last one for you, Simon Blackburn.
Roy Williams ought to take that class then because he has no clue about the triangle in two.
Simon Blackburn. No one wields that pitching wedge like Simon Blackburn.
I apologize. Oh. Simon Blackburn, a neo-Humean philosopher.
Should have known that, I guess.
He wrote the book Essays in Quasi-Realism.
Okay.
Back in 93. It was a great, great selling book.
We'll all learn together.
Last one for you, Bob. How about Joachim Niemann?
I'm sorry, what?
Joachim Niemann.
Golfer.
He is a Chilean golfer. He's actually 79th in the PGA World Rankings right now. So, tried to sneak a good one past you. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce his name, to be honest with you.
Joaquin.
There's an N at the end. What is that, a tilde? A little accent mark at the top? I don't know.
You're asking the wrong people.
Full disclosure. Congratulations, boys. You know your philosophers and your golfers.
Top of the leaderboard right now, Shane Lowry at -4.
Shane Lowry.
Alex Noren at -3. Bunch of philosopher golfers. Webb Simpson, heard of him. He's at -3. Sergio Garcia, 3-under through his round today. And Dylan Fratelli, also at -3. Robert McIntyre, which I believe came up during philosopher.
He did.
He's at -3.
I love me a good Dylan Fratelli, though.
And nice this salad. Name I don't know. Kira Deck, Affie Barnrat.
Affie Barnrat is right.
I guess it's probably Afi Barnrath.
I've never heard of any of these people.
Hiradek Afi Barnrath.
When's Tiger playing?
His tie for second. Tiger Woods tees off at later on this afternoon. It says 3 o'clock BTN time.
That's BST, Big Ten Network.
BST time, I mean. I don't know when that is. Gary Woodland plus 2 through 15. Brooks Koepka is minus 2 through 6. Throwing darts without science is fun.
We do it every day.
And I love the fact that Sports Illustrated had Connor Orr go through the entire NFL schedule with, like, zero science. It was just, go pick who's going to win. Usually there's a lot of science behind most of the, like, figuring out the records and what have you. So you had the Chiefs 13-3 and winning the division.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
He had the Chiefs, actually the best record in the AFC. Mm-hmm. He had the Chiefs and Rams, the only 13-3 teams. But he had the Patriots going 12-4, so the Chiefs wouldn't have home field advantage throughout the postseason once again. He actually didn't like the Chargers. He has them at 10-6.
That's not a bad record.
He has
record,
the Chiefs
though.
Losses to the Chargers, the Colts, and he says a super random early season upset at the hands of the Jaguars.
So opening day.
Since they may still be in the midst of some roster upheaval.
So he thinks the Chiefs are going to lose the opener to Jacksonville.
Yes.
He's wrong, but whatever. Yes. 14-2.
So 13-3 for the Chiefs. But I love picks without any science. I was waiting for there was like a long write-up and like, okay, what went into this? He's like,
there's never any science.
Yeah, but
in
the
this.
Write-up was ridiculously long.
It was really long for
something they put no research they gave me or effort just, into.
They gave me all the spreadsheets with the schedules on them, and I went through and went win-loss, and then had to double check to make sure I didn't give somebody a win who was actually a loss in a head-to-head game. I'm like, kind of sounds like what we do when the schedule comes out. Win-loss. Mm-hmm. We figure it from there. Giants, Bills, Bengals, Titans, Raiders. He had all at 6-10.
I can see the Bills, Bengals, Titans, and Raiders all being 6-10.
A little bit different from your 6-10s, which you have half the league going 6-10 this season.
Yeah, I'm not a big buyer in a lot of these teams. Like, every year you have these teams that, the national media loves and thinks they're going to be good, and they never are. And maybe the Colts won't be 6-10, but they're not going to be 12-4. The Browns he has at 9-7. They're a 6-10 lock. And he has the Jets at 9-7. The Jets aren't even really a team. Like, that doesn't even count. Like, the NFL really has 31 teams. The Jets don't really count. They're just there. So, to me, to sit there and say the Browns will be 9-7 is absolutely wrong. And Baker Mayfield continues to play into my reasonings why I think this is going to be a 6-10 team in Cleveland and why I believe I will be closer to being right about their record than the national media will be. The Browns aren't going to the playoffs. And Baker Mayfield is a big reason why. He just can't stay out of his own way and just kind of shut up. Like, he lets little things bother him, right? And so when you see a quarterback who's supposed to be a leader of men out here reacting and letting little things bother him, that doesn't bode well for the way he's going to play on Sunday. Because if Hugh Jackson is still bothering him and Giants fans are bothering him and he's still fighting with the University of Texas, what's going to happen when Frank Clark's lined up across from him and starts talking trash on his mom or his girlfriend or something like that? How's he going to react to that? I don't think Baker Mayfield handles pressure situations all that well. Until he shows a different side of his public persona where he's able to just kind of go out there and not react and not overreact and not freak out by little things, I'm not a buyer that Baker Mayfield is going to lead the Cleveland Browns to a championship. And he's a guy right now that I think is very young and has the ability to still go out there and grow. But right now, I don't like his persona. I don't like his attitude as a starting quarterback. You don't see Patrick Mahomes out there talking trash to everybody, and Baker Mayfield hasn't accomplished squat. Baker Mayfield was 7-8-1 last year with the Cleveland Browns. They didn't even finish 500. Patrick Mahomes is the reigning MVP. He went to the AFC Championship game, threw 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards. And you hear this guy humbled. He doesn't overreact. He doesn't say anything to anybody. He knows how to play the game. Baker Mayfield does not know how to play the game. And for a quarterback who's supposed to lead a renaissance of a team, I got to have a guy that's a little more cool, calm, and collected than this hothead is right now.
Well, I said that coming out of college. I love his ability, and I loved his fire. My question was, can his college rah-rah fire translate to the NFL? Because I don't know if the NFL needs you running up and down the sidelines hooting and hollering, sure, with your helmet off.
Okay? I mean, he did lead his team to 7.5 more wins than they had the season prior.
And he was really good at that in college, like really good at firing up. We know what happened at Kansas.
Right.
We know about him playing.
And I didn't have a problem with that in college.
It was great.
But you're in the NFL now, and you're still ripping former coaches.
My biggest question was, will he be able to tone it down enough to take it to the professional level? Will he have
not tone it down, but let his emotions get the best of him?
And will he have his teammates follow him in those situations? Will he be a leader?
College
in those,
is different.
In those situations?
It's vastly different. You can out-athlete Kansas, okay? You can out-athlete just about any team in college when you're a guy like Baker Mayfield. Now when you're in the NFL and you're on that same level playing field, you can't let your emotions get the best of you because it's going to wear you down and you're going to not be good. And he's in June and July letting the emotions get the best of him right now. What's going to happen, you know, when he's in a pressure situation? He's not going to be like Ned and think about Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin with 23 seconds left to fuel and be cool, calm, and collected. I think at what his biggest strength was in college, his excitement, his emotion, all of that, that could be his biggest weakness and his downfall in the NFL.
Baker on the pressure to win now as he spoke to ESPN.
I don't feel pressure. You know, these fans deserve it. You know, they're diehard fans. And it's very rare to have, you know, fans like that through thick and thin. Trying to reawaken that beast, as John Dorsey says, and, you know, get these people excited again because they haven't tasted that feeling in a long time.
I love he's quoting Dorsey, by the way. It's fantastic.
Those fans don't deserve anything more than any other fan base.
Because they've suffered?
Who cares?
I mean, they won one game in a two-year span, Bob.
So? Nobody's holding a gun to your head and said, you got to be a Cleveland fan.
I feel like they took a great step last year. It's a fantastic step.
We're
kind of all rooting for Cleveland. Now I'm like, okay, you still haven't arrived. I feel like the vibe I get from Baker is, I've arrived. We've arrived. The Browns have arrived.
Right.
All this hype is
They're
warranted.
They're walking around like they accomplished what the Chiefs accomplished.
All this hype is warranted, and you know who's in the catbird seat? Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
Got rid of the distraction that was Antonio Brown, right?
Right.
They're going to come back this year, and no one's buying them.
Right.
Ben Roethlisberger's not saying a thing.
Correct.
Watch out for the Steelers. And they're playing it perfectly, too. Just let the Browns sit out there and talk.
Right.
Let them go through the OBJ stuff. I think that's going to backfire, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think he and Baker will be at odds at some point in time. They're not now. He's backing him to the point of angering Giants fans at this point.
Right,
in time.
Yeah.
That his quote was, he's here to play in front of fans who actually care, who will actually show up to every game and pack the stadium and love him for who he is.
You realize, like, people have had Giants season tickets for, like, 80 straight years and things. Like, that's just a stupid statement. That's an ignorant comment to make about another fan base that you don't know anything about. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr. fought with a kicking net on the sidelines, for God's sakes. Odell Beckham Jr. was never a guy that, you know, really embraced, you know, the fan base there, and the fan base never embraced him. So, to me, to start ripping other fan bases is juvenile and childish and just another example of why I don't buy into this edition of the Cleveland Browns, because your quarterback is now fighting with Giant fans, and he's still fighting with Hugh Jackson. I mean, so You've got a quarterback out there who doesn't understand what's important. He doesn't have his priorities in line, and he's a guy that's going out there and focusing on the wrong things. And in the NFL, man, you got to be calculated. You have to know where your priorities are. You have to know what you're supposed to do. And if you're wasting time with all of this other nonsense, you're not focusing on what you're supposed to be focusing on.
You remember that time last year when you said that Baker Mayfield would have a better season than Patrick Mahomes?
I do. That was a big mistake by
my part.
Right
at the beginning of the season. What happened? How did you fall so out of love with Baker Mayfield?
Because I'm just watching the way that he talks and acts now, and I'm looking at it, and I'm going, boy, that was cool in college. I loved it in college. But in the NFL, you can't act that way.
Because I get the general sense. Like, it feels to me like Baker Mayfield's one of those kind of guys that if he's on your team, you're somewhat okay with it. Like, you like him.
Absolutely.
You like him having that mentality. Like, and most fans want the players on the team to have that mentality that they have. Like, they want to hate the same people that the fans hate, and they want to have the rivalries with the same people, and they want to, you know, hey, we deserve this.
But he's acting like
he
arrived and accomplished something, Ryan, and he hasn't yet. I mean, what Patrick Mahomes did last year, if this stuff was coming from Mahomes, you'd be like, well, I mean, he kind of went out there and backed it up. Baker Mayfield went out there and went 7-8-1.
I mean, for the Cleveland Browns, a team that won one game in two seasons,
yeah,
Bob.
I know.
That's an
them.
Impressive feat.
Yeah, well, 7-8-1 is not impressive in the NFL. It doesn't get you in the
playoffs.
I think
if he's your guy, you're vehemently defending him.
Yeah, sure you are.
And for me, I think he's fantastic. Go ahead and talk and chirp and do all this stuff. I think it's great.
What
court, if it's on another team? Well, like I'm in that camp. Like, it's great for us and it's great for drama and it's great to rile it up. Do I think all of this is beneficial to his particular team? I don't.
What do they say? Talk softly and carry a big stick. Is isn't that the saying? Something like that. You know, mm-hmm. you look at Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Russell Wilson, Philip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, you throw into the great quarterbacks, okay? Put the great quarterbacks of this generation out there. How many of these guys acted like this?
I don't know. He's a new voice. He's a new blood. The new era. I would just be a little hesitant if I'm a Cleveland Brown fan. Like, 7 wins was nice. It was a massive step.
Should be noted, too, Baker Mayfield only started 13 of their games last season. 6-7 was his record.
Yeah.
Same as 7.
You didn't arrive yet.
Right, you haven't arrived.
You're on the ascension, you hope, but you don't know.
A wise philosopher once said, you take 2 steps forward, take 1 step back.
Mm. Was that MC Scat Cat?
It was.
That was. Very. Or open golfer, either one.
I think, ultimately, the Browns are going to take a step back before they step forward.
This half hour brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967. Meanwhile, Baker made a bold move in his personal life. We'll discuss it next.
Fesco in the morning.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.